You're listening to the Black British Parent Podcast, having conversations, sharing experiences, and supporting the Black British Parent community with your host, Deborah Field Pelly.
So, can you tell us a little bit about Black Poppy Rose and how it came to be?
I certainly can. So Black Poppy Rose is a symbol and a concept that I came up with 13 years ago to remember the Black, African, Caribbean, West Indian, Pacific Island and Indigenous communities' contributions to history outside of a slavery narrative. And the symbol is for us to be able to have conversations wherever we are all over the world about our history, about our connections, and about the differences under the term Black and our Black cultures, our Black heritage, you know, whether or not we classify ourselves as Black, but people who look like us, who are supposed to have African, you know, descendants, for us to be able to talk about a history that the whole world ignores in the way that we cannot have it ignored anymore.
Yeah. You mentioned about our history outside of the slavery narrative. Can you expand on that a little bit, please?
So our generations, the generation after us, the generation before us, you know, our great grandparents only knew slavery.
Yeah.
You know, we only know slavery within our generations. We have no relatives who passed down any other type of history outside of slavery. So when we're looking at history, that's the lens we're looking at it from, you know, from a place, almost like a place of lack, because we've been taught to see ourselves in a certain way. We've been taught to deal with the world in a certain way. We've been taught to, you know, punish our children, you know, see education. You know, we've been taught to do things from this slavery narrative. So when I look at the work that we're doing, it's to try and take us away from that, to be able to look at things objectively, to be able to see whether or not there's any other way that we can kind of heal through some of the things that we don't know that we need to be healed from.
Yeah, that's definitely a tricky one, because having conversations with people about our background and where we're coming from, a lot of us don't particularly like talking about it. So if we don't like addressing or even acknowledging the issue, it can be definitely difficult to attempt to do the work to heal from it.
So
how did you come into studying history and genealogy? I mean, what was it that brought the two together for you?
So I started studying world history when I was about 28. So I'd been traveling the world. So wherever I go in the world, I try and find the Black communities because I want to see how people are living. And when I was younger, because I was first generation born in this country, my mum bought the encyclopedia sets from the door-to-door salesman. And I used to go through there looking for Black people and then writing out all their information and then telling people about it because I couldn't see us. You know, and the people that I could see, I didn't understand how they were relevant to me. Per se. So when I got to about 28, I started learning world history, Black and world history, and looking at our place in the world, not just, you know, Black history, you know, who am I, what am I, looking at it globally. But then looking at who am I, what am I, it was like, well, I'm from my parents, but what about my grandparents? What about their parents? And if I can learn more about Hitler's family, then why don't I know more about my own family? You know, and then it took me on that journey to discover who am I and how do I fit into this global African conversation? Because being born here, you know, what does it mean to be Black? What does it mean to be African? You know, I learned from America. I learned from South Africa's apartheid. I learned from, you know, learning about Marcus Garvey in, you know, a ethereal way. But who was Marcus? You know, what did he do? Why was it significant? None of that made sense to me. So then when I was learning world history, it put us in a perspective of what was going on, you know, universally, not just one thing. And it wasn't one thing that's triggered another. It's several different things at the same time happening and causing that, you know, snowball effect. So from there, it led me to go and find my grandparents because my parents didn't know much. And if you don't know something, I'm going to go past you. Thank you. Thank you for your time. But I'm going to go past you and go and keep finding it because there's a answer I'm looking for. And if you don't have it, somebody else will have it. And that's been my nature for my whole life. You know, if I want something, why should I not go after it and go and get it? Why can I not achieve it? Why should I not, you know, put my best foot forward to be able to learn and keep adapting to be able to get to that? So when I started to ask my grandparents questions, you know, I'm an adult now. When I was younger, it was children should be seen and not heard kind of thing. But now I'm an adult, I've got questions, and they're not disrespectful questions. They're questions for me to help to understand how my parents are the way they are, you know, why they've chosen to parent me the way they've chosen to parent me, why, you know, they're here in England and why you're not here, you know, that kind of conversation. And then through that, I then learned my grandparents had siblings and then they had parents, and then it just became bigger. And then it made sense to me, you know, the African lineage and then heritage, that it's bigger. And we are a continent, you know, it's a continent. We treat it like a country, but it's a continent that I'm a part of. But there is no part of that continent that I can actually say I'm from. Therefore, I've got to claim the whole thing. So that's where the genealogy aspect of it came from. And then when anybody sees me, they see a Black woman, you know, where I come from, unless I tell you, you will not know. So, you know. And then my looks, you know, do I look like I'm from Ghana? Do I look like I'm from Egypt? Do I look like I'm from Uganda? Do I look like I'm from, you know, Namibia? You know, it was all of that. And then the conversations of everybody telling me who and what I am. You don't get to tell me who and what I am. How does that make sense from your perspectives? How does that make sense when I haven't even embarked on a journey of self-discovery for myself? And I'm sure you haven't for yourself. But because if you had, you wouldn't be telling people what you think they are, what you think they should represent as. So I very much went on that journey to find, you know, my place here. And especially being first generation born here, you know, when I look behind me, there's no history behind me for the people who are related to me, except for that portion, you know, which is now classified as the Windrush era from 1948 to 1971. But all my family are from Jamaica. My parents were born before independence. You know, so when people are telling me what I can call myself, you call yourself based on the times that your parents were born in, that you were born in. You know, there are laws around that and things that people have put in place. So to kind of offshoot all of that, know your legacy, know your heritage, then be able to name yourself, decide what you want to call yourself. So the journey very much took me there. And alongside that, out of my mouth, I said, Black people went in the war. Because I went to a good school, so I thought. And as a result of that, I was like, no, we weren't there, because if we were there, surely we would have been taught that, because it was a British Empire. And that I was taught, that it was a British Empire. And when my history teacher's telling me that, you know, my ancestors are slaves, I said, that's not true, because nobody in my family told me that. So I left there and went to geography and then learned about the world, you know, from a geographical perspective, you know, landmass, areas, nature, thing, all those kind of things, you know, culture, language, that just made sense. When I started to learn history, I'd already known about, you know, the world in that way. So being able to put faces to places. And then as a result of me saying that out of my mouth, I generally don't like to tell lies because it doesn't sit well with me. You can't grow from lies. You know, I will not say certain things, but I'm certainly not going to ensure that I'm going to lie about it. And if I don't know something, then I will retract what I've said if I've made a commitment to say that. And that's how I kind of fashion myself. If I've committed to say something, I'm going to ensure that what I'm saying is the right thing based on research, based on knowing that, you know, I'm being able to quote somebody else's word, you know, from the horse's mouth, if I can get it from there. And Black Poppy Rose formed from that, because then I was like, well, I know my ancestors and I know other people's ancestors, and I know that we've been a part of this world and these worlds for a very long time. I don't feel that we're being respected. I'm not going to moan to the people who have continuously shown our communities disrespect about it. So what am I going to do about it? I'm going to create something that allows the community that I'm coming from to be able to have a strong place and a strong conversation about the things that irk us, about the things that, you know, upset us, about the things that excite us, so that we're able to control our own narratives and work through a lot of the things that we need to work through together from our place and our perspectives.
That's amazing. I mean, you being a female historian, what's that been like for you, especially particularly in the area that you're smiling, in the area that you are covering? Because with World War, it doesn't seem to be much of a, I don't know, a woman or feminine sort of place of conversation. Usually, I'm just saying, you know,
what's your heart? Well, I'm only a woman. I'm also young from their perspectives, you know, and I'm not, you know, I'm not university trained either. You know, I've studied with our historians from our communities. I read our historians' book. You can see my books in the background. I live for, you know, I read a lot. I ingest a lot. So I use a structure, but I make it make sense to me. But within the world that I'm in, you know, being a woman, being a young woman, being a woman of West Indian you know, ancestry who doesn't have any official links to, you know, I'm not able to link to a tribe on the continent. You know, all of that makes a difference. You know, in different people's worlds, they see things in different ways. And I'm only talking about it from my world. So when I go out there, you know, people, the first thing they want to know is, where am I from? You know, where are my parents from? Because then it allows them to have some sort of harmonious relationship with me based on, you know, where they feel that my ancestry lies. And then as a woman, you know, our issues are, the things that we have to go through are so, you look at the world and you're like, these things really exist. You know, we watch them in movies, we see them in books, we read articles, but we're like, that can't be true. It's bizarre, you know, it's really, really bizarre. And especially in the times that we're in where, you know, gender is now becoming a myth almost, and that everybody's getting to decide what they want to classify themselves as. You know, I look at the history and heritage of people who are classified as women, and I look at, you know, our struggles. I look at how hard we fought, you know, motherhood, being a wife, being, you know, controlled in a particular type of way for generations, you know, having a set group of people decide what it means to be feminine, what it means to be this, what it means to be that, and having those conditionings, you know, put on you for generations. Because within that, I talk about, you know, ain't I a woman? So Maya Angelou, but the phrase came from Sojourner Truth.
Yes.
Back in the 1860s, and she fought within the American Civil War. This is where we have the abolition of slavery in America in 1868. But back then, she was like, ain't I a woman? And we're still having the conversation because, what, not even 80 years before, we have, ain't I a man, ain't I a brother? You know, our community has been dictated to as to what we are, where our statuses are. And as a woman, as a Black woman, as a Black British, West Indian, African, global, you know, all of these titlings that, you know, you have to, that you're told you should, you know, adapt to yourself to be able to gain access to certain things. It makes it challenging because you think, shouldn't my IQ be enough?
Yeah.
Right? And if your IQ is enough, or your concepts, or your ability to be able to make sense of some of the theories, if that's not enough, then what is it really, you know? Because a lot of the arenas that we see, they're male-dominated, and they're male-dominated for a reason, because women were supposed to be at home, in the kitchen, looking after the children, cleaning, cooking, doing all of those, you know, all those things that everybody should be doing. But again, it's almost like we're unable to evolve ourselves as time keeps evolving. You know, we still keep some of the frameworks that give us this comfort that we aren't really comfortable with around, you know, male and female and positions and roles and responsibilities. And we the classifications that are gifted, you know, it's about balance, you know. And when we look at a lot of our African Kemetian principles, and, you know, we're able to put them together, it was always about balance. You know, it's about law of polarity. Who brings what, when, how, when, why? You know, work to your strengths. Find somebody who has, you know, areas of improvements that you don't have. So there's that balance. So within the arena, you know, everything's difficult, especially when we're doing things from our perspectives in our way that isn't palatable for somebody else's notion, is a challenge. But, you know, as a woman, there's also that additional barrier that's up, like male only club. And I wouldn't, as I think about it, I wouldn't even know what arenas I don't get allowed into, because I don't pay attention to that. Any door I want to go into, I'm going into that door, whether or not I have to hold a man's hand or not. Yeah.
I like that. I like the sound of that. So, I mean, I guess being, cause we look at things differently, don't we? Slightly differently to men, I suppose, and men look at things differently to us. So where they might be, for so many years I've noticed that men have focused on a specific area, but then when I hear you speak and look at what you're doing, you're coming from a very unique sort of perspective. How is that welcomed in the world of historians, do you think?
I think it's very welcomed, and it's taken, so I've been doing this for 13 years now. Mm-hmm. And I started in 2010 because I knew the centenary for World War I was coming up in 2014 to 2018. And I wanted us to have enough time to be able to start having the conversations. And what I do, although it's unique to Black Poppy Rose, there are other people who are also interested in the Black and African, Caribbean, West Indian, Pacific Island, Indigenous communities' contributions to the war to add to that diverse narrative, you know. But from my perspective, every single human being is diverse. You know, every single white person isn't the same. Every single Black person mm-hmm. is not the same. Every single Asian person is not the same. None of us are the same. And the perspective that I take from this is that all of our voices should have the opportunity to be heard. I will not speak for any other Black person. I will not speak for any other mm-hmm. African person. I will not speak for any other, you know, person, because their aspect of Blackness that we, you know, we've been bought into is very different to mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not any more or any less Black because of how I see things, and neither is anybody else. You know, we're coming from an ideology of how we want to survive in a world that has shown us that we don't matter. You know, we matter in our own worlds, we matter to ourselves, and that's always important. However, we also have the conditioning to adapt ourselves to a world that continuously shows us that we don't matter. So with what I do, it's very much around looking at that shame, looking at that trauma, and being able to look at the trauma objectively, because I wasn't there. Many people of today wasn't there. But the benefits that we've all been able to experience and the disadvantages that we've all experienced has to be measured, you know, and that's where the conversation starts.
I know you know your work is important, but when did you actually realize how important your work is with Black Poppy Rose?
I think 5 years in, I was invited to be a keynote speaker in Dublin, in Ireland, and mm-hmm. for the Africa Centre. And there was one little girl in the audience, so I had to readapt my narrative to deliver to her, because when it comes to children, you know, it makes sense to deliver to them because everybody gets it. But after the talk, I had asked, you know, everybody gave their feedback, and I asked her how she felt about it, and she said she feels equal to white people. And as a mum, it broke my heart, because I'm like, you know, we talk to our children, we empower them, we tell them they're beautiful, we you know, Black power, fists, you know, hair, oh, we give them all of it. You know, we try and pour into them. I mean, we will never know what they're truly thinking, what they truly believe. We will never know any of those things unless, you know, it's time. But she was no more than, what, 6, 7?
Gosh.
She's telling me that she's equal to white people. And there I was like, I can never stop this. You know, because if I can empower one little girl, you know, one little Black girl in Ireland, yeah, to feel equal, because her mum would have never known she didn't feel equal before she came to that talk. She would have never known what her daughter would have taken away. But she saw images of people who looked like her, heard about them doing phenomenal things to be able to fight both sides, you know, on the enemy, fighting against the enemy, and fighting with the enemy on their own, you know, the home side, and looking at where they were coming from in the world, and how they, you know, how it's been documented that they thought what they remember, what they contributed to. And from that point, I felt that it was really what I'm doing is valid, is important, you know. We all think what we're doing is important, but when, you know, other people receive it in ways that you could never envision, I could have never envisioned that. And now when I go into schools and the young people, they're so vibrant, they're so lovely. And I don't remember being that vibrant when I was younger, and not because I wasn't, but I just don't remember that far back mm-hmm. in my childhood. And I think to myself, if I was empowered with the truth of the world that I lived in, what would that have made me? And I don't ever live with shoulda, coulda, woulda, you know, and you know, what could I have done? Because my path literally is this, you know, I've gone through many things, I do many things, I experience many things to get to this place. But I think to myself, what more can I now give to assist in, you know, the up and coming generation to have that truth, to be able to hold something, you know, dear to them that nobody can take away, no matter what they do, no matter what they try, you know, how that allows them to be able to feel that belonging. So no matter whether or not they were born somewhere, or they've got this passport, or wherever or not, none of that matters. You know, what matters is that if you root yourself in yourself, wherever you go, you build, you ensure that you're able to, you know, make what you understand of your community to be able to be a reality.
That's so powerful. I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? Because I think when I think about the work you do, and I think about us knowing how those of us, majority of us who are of African Caribbean descent, we know how our parents got here, our grandparents got here via Windrush, etc. But we don't really understand what that means and our connection slightly before that. And the work that you're doing, obviously, I think the first time I really fully acknowledged that was watching that movie Red Tails, and I was just like, oh my gosh, like, to be, obviously it's not 100% accurate storyline, but just that concept alone was enough to make me start thinking. Because again, you know, I've said this to you before, like when I was younger, I went to Roman Catholic primary school, and very Irish, predominantly dominated sort of thing, and it was like, they spoke about World War II and they spoke about World War I, but I never ever saw us in those images. And I thought, where was we? What was our parents doing? And I kind of felt like almost like disheartened, and I didn't feel as proud, I suppose, of my people, because all I knew about was the African Holocaust, which we were taught was slavery times. And I guess the way that they tell the story about our people from that setting kind of makes us feel like was kind of ignorant and naive and wasn't really empowered or strong, you know. So then to fast forward to see the work that you're doing and being able to buy a Black Poppy Rose badge and give it to my children, they wear it proudly on their jackets. Like, it's controversial, I suppose, in many ways, because people ask questions, or I guess people would acknowledge, see it and respond. They wouldn't necessarily, some people don't ask questions, they just kind of see it and look away very quickly. I find that really interesting. But nonetheless, my children feel empowered, and I want to thank you for allowing me to be able to have a point of reference, have these conversations with my children. And I'm sure many other families would feel the same. So what was it like for you growing up in the UK with your Caribbean parents and perhaps going to school, etc.? What was that experience like for Selena?
Well, I'm from Brixton. So I was born in Brixton, my whole life, Brixton. However, I went to primary school in Brixton, and then I went to, what did I go to? A grammar school in Mitcham. And then I went to a high school in Raynes Park, which was the borderline of National Front.
Gosh.
But because I was from Brixton, and back then we had the 28s, and Brixton had a renowned reputation, I had no issues. Yeah, none. The only issues I had was, you know, my history teacher. Well, it wasn't even an issue. My history teacher telling me that my ancestors were slaves, and I was like, well, no. So I didn't go back to history again. I went to geography. But I was very headstrong. I've been very headstrong for a long time. Like, if I didn't like certain things, you couldn't make me do things I didn't want to do. No, I didn't smoke. Everybody else smoked. I didn't, you know, I wasn't somebody who followed things that I didn't agree with. I did a lot of research. You know, I looked into things before I went to do them. Some people say, you know, that's not living. Okay. But I, you know, I was growing up in a time where we had billboards of white girls who were dying of taking ecstasy. Billboards. I can remember a billboard coming home. Come on. And I'm like, we're doing this for fun. We're not paying attention. That's not for me. That is really, really not for me. And I thought, you know, I was told that we're supposed to get our education, you know, get our education, and then the world will be open to us. So I focused on that. You know, I went through school, I got my good grades. I then went to do a legal secretary, which I didn't really enjoy. But I think I did half of the year. Then I decided that's not for me, so I'm not doing that. Then I went to do leisure and tourism because I knew I wanted to travel. And I knew I wanted to do an arrangement of different things. So it had business management, it had finance, it had marketing, it had all of the areas of working that I'd be able to work from. And I got, you know, I got distinctions for that, I got good grades. So I decided that I'd make sure I got the best grades I could. So whenever I decided to go to university, but nobody couldn't tell me nothing. They couldn't tell me what I couldn't do, but I wasn't going to go because I wasn't ready, because I didn't know what I wanted to go and develop in. So, I used to travel everywhere. I was a silver service waitress. I did all kinds of jobs. So I traveled all over London. So Brixton was the place I slept. You know, it wasn't really a place I grew. I didn't know any of the Black history in Brixton. I just knew I lived there. So as I got older and I started to learn more about Brixton, I thought, imagine that's where I'm birthed, you know, because I was born just after the Brixton riots of 1981. But I had no idea, because my mum ensured that we were, I guess, you know, protected from the anti-ness of what she understood of what she grew up with being here, because she came over when she was 5, and she has her own history in regards to what's happened to her and how she sees the world and things like that, and wanted us to have a better experience. So she made sure that happened. So it meant that, you know, she closed us off to certain things and ensured that we had a particular direction, especially with education. And she took us out, you know, to museums. She took us to different places to eat. She took us to different places around so we could see this place that we call home. Although she didn't see it as her home, she wanted us to know that this is a place that we could call home, but not know how to kind of assign roots because we didn't understand that, you know, this is where we're from because, you know, there's more white people here than us.
You said about your mum protecting you from the auntiness. Do you remember your first recollection of recognizing or acknowledging the auntiness, like when you first, the earliest point?
No, only people telling me to go home.
Okay. How old was you around that kind of point?
14. So this is when I was up in, you know, the NF areas, up in the raised parks, to go home. And I'm like, well, you must be in Brixton because you can't be that stupid. But you might be that stupid. And, you know, it's something I held on to because I'm like, you couldn't be telling me to go home to Brixton. You've got to be saying something more. And because I hadn't been exposed to this kind of antiness, I didn't know where to put it. It didn't, you know, everything was had to be very logical. So if it wasn't logical, it didn't make sense to me.
Did you discuss it with your parents at all?
No, because it was such a throwaway rubbish. It was, what? Go home and do what? And then when I get older and I talk about it, and I'm like, well, if you're telling me to go home, you must know more about me than I know about me. Right, that's why I go through that, because I'm like, if I am to go to Africa, because you call me African, where would you like me to go, sir? Where would you like me to go? Exactly. What visa do I need to get to go to where I need to go? Because although you see me as an African, when I go there, my passport doesn't tell anybody that. You know, I've got to get a visa. I've got to spend money, buy a visa. Although,
so that's like 20 years ago then, less than 20 years ago.
Oh, no. Don't put, it's 26 years ago. Less than 26 years. Please, madam.
Not trying to add on any years at all. Okay, that's interesting. So what's it like? It's okay. That was kind of your experience and coming up to some extent in childhood. What's it like for you now being a parent of your own children in this day and age? And are you having to have conversations of antiness with your little ones at any point? Hopefully not.
Well, I talk to my children about everything.
Okay.
Literally. So whatever they have to say, I will then put it into context of the world. And ever since, you know, we've had the televised murder of George Floyd, you know, I'm very open with that. And I use historical events to make sense of that event that had taken place and the abhorrent nature of how the world deals with that. And the, you know, the history behind the movements like Black Lives Matters and looking at the, you know, the civil rights movement, the anti-apartheid movements, you know, the movements that are predated and we're still having movements today and looking at, you know, to this day, we're still doing the same things our ancestors did. To this day, we're still being treated. And so to this day, you know, when I educate them around history and the things that are relatable to the times that we're living in, I talked to them about the disparity around the classifications of racism and prejudice and how they are not far few in between, but we are in a racist infrastructure that is supported by individual prejudice. Yeah, so when people say they're not racist, okay, that's wonderful. However, there are prejudices that we all have because we are all judgment. We all have them that are supported by the racist infrastructure. So that's how I talk to them. That's how I deal with them. And I talk to them very much about owning their own truths, you know, being accountable for their word, being accountable for their actions, as all people are and should be, and not to be afraid of any of that either.
That's awesome. What made you decide to address that kind of area or that field with your children? Because a lot of parents in from our community make a point, like your parents, to try and avoid those conversations or try to not make it so evident within our children.
I look at our generation, our generation, those of us born in the latter part of the 70s and up to probably 1986, yeah? And I look at the lies that we fed ourselves and the lies that we feed to each other based on our ideologies about the world that we feel rejects us, you know? And the little white lies that we tell ourselves and we tell each other, I'm not about that. I you know, it irks me to deal with that. You know, I fully understand that, you know, we live in a world that a lot of things are common and a lot of things are, you know, there's social norms. I'm not interested in any social norms that mean that I'm going to have to lie to myself and make stories about something that is not relevant. You know, because I see and I look at how that's conditioned people. And when you under-educate, because it's not that we're not being educated, we are being under-educated. And we are under-educated about ourselves first and foremost before we're uneducated about anybody else. And I don't want that for my children.
100%. So what I was going to ask you was, it was in my head and I just listened to undereducated, just like got me stuck there, because it's really true. The whole we're going to these educational establishments, and that's not to knock them at all, but it's when we're looking at the quality of education, what they're actually teaching us or conditioning us with. And then for us, and I suppose many other ethnic groups, I should say global majority groups, are having to kind of re-educate our children about ourselves and where we're coming from. And I just wonder how that can be for some children, being in that kind of experience, like knowing what they know, being empowered about themselves and where they come from, and entering into a school, you know, situation where they're constantly trying to downplay or minimize or have their microaggressions about us, you know?
Well, growing up, you know, I was told that there was a place for everything. There's a time and place for everything, right? The concept of education isn't one thing. There are educations. Yeah. Everything in life is plural. Every single thing. We've been undertaught to understand that the education that is provided by a governmental system is the be all or end all. That's what you need to take tests to get to enter into the system. Yeah. You go to school, college, university to enter the system that does things in a particular way. It's not education for life. It's education to gain access to a system. And because we're all working around the clock, as our parents did, as our grandparents, as everybody who's ever been a parent has been working, you know, we're always working, and our children are left to fend for themselves. Yeah? There are some parents who have time. There's some parents who don't have time. Some parents who are doing their best. And that all has to be enough, because there is not one teacher. There is not one parent. There is not one of nothing. So as a result, it's all of our responsibilities to do our bits so that people can have access to the variety that is out there. And education from a school perspective is to gain entry to a system that needs servants, because that was the system was created for, to be able to feed it. That's my reality. And what I teach my children who are in that system is that it is a system. What do you want from that system? But you learn about you. You contribute yourself to that system, and you find your passions or whatever it is that you know you love or you develop, and you're able to navigate through that system doing that. But a lot of people don't have that kind of that view of it, because, you know, when we were growing up, it's like, get your education, make your money. But then to do what? To build the same system.
So what In your words, obviously, what's the significance and importance of knowing our ancestral lineage, and how important, significant, that's a big question, is our historic, I guess, knowing our history?
Well, it's not a big one. It's a small one. Yeah? Okay. And the reason why it's small, yeah, is because I'm not a part of every African.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I hear about Nelson Mandela, I'm not South African. Mm-hmm. I don't have South African ancestry that I can connect to. I'm empathic to South African history. I go through the history and the from the Zosa Wars of 1779, where, you know, Europe then went to demoralize and occupy that portion of Africa over 100 years, and then the warfares that predate after that. But my history is from my understanding of the lineage that I'm coming from. And I'm coming from Britain, which is an empire. So I learn about empire, the ancestry of the people of the empire. Then my parents and my grandparents are coming from the island of Jamaica. But when I get back to the 1400s, there is no Jamaica. Yeah. So where do I have to go? I've got to go back to the continent, because my blood takes me there. Yeah. Not my DNA test. My blood takes me there. But that's my personal journey, my own journey. And it takes me to the Western portion. And a lot of people know that that's where they were transporting Africans out of the continent to send them over to the Western world. Yeah, so I may not be, and those regions weren't named what we know them today. You know, those are political, alignments and things like that, and for us to, wave our flags and celebrate. But when you go to each country, it's already a melting pot of various different tribes, nations, people. It's not one flag, it's not one name, it's not one anthem, it's a lot of things. And when it comes to our ancestry, it's important that we understand, the parents that we're coming from, where their lines come from. So when I look at mine, I study Black British history because I'm British. I'm not English. I'm British because my family are coming from the British Empire. But I've got white great great grandparents who were born here. And through doing the genealogy, does that make me white? No. It's a part of my ancestry, And I'm able to look and explore that based on looking at a time where people had to be alive to come together to be able to create me. And that's what we look at. We explore the journey of the peoples who had to have been here, whether or not you believe in the Big Bang Theory, whether or not you believe, God made the earth in 7 days, whatever you believe, somebody linked to me had to be there at the beginning for me to be now, because we didn't just appear. It doesn't just appear. The seeds don't just appear. Forget all the, biological warfare and all the things that they're making, but something had to have existed. So I believe that the chicken was there before the egg. Yeah? Because something had to exist to create the next thing. That's what I understand. So there had to have been somebody, somebodies, to be able to be there before for me to exist today. So that's what I encourage people to understand, because when you do that, you then understand your place now. You understand the places of your ancestors before, and then you leave a trail for those coming in 100 years to know that there is something more than them, and that they also have something to do and something to leave. What I encourage people to understand is that you are one. Yeah. But when you put one with another one and another one, it builds and it grows. But all you have to do is be that one. No, learn that one. Learn to be that one. Because then when you come against another one, you're sharing your one with their one. It doesn't make two, but you're just sharing your oneness. Yeah? But then you grow from them. I grow from you. We go, and how we spread it allows us to be able to understand the impact of that oneness of you knowing and understanding yourself that nobody else can give you. We've got several teachers, but nobody can't tell me what Selena is. Nobody can't tell me how to act Selena, sound Selena, smell Selena. Nobody can't do that. I've got to feel that, and I've got to work through that to know how I want to step out of my house every day. And that comes from really understanding where I stand and where I sit now, what I believe in, what I believe is to be my truth, what I believe I connect with based on what I research, based on what I have access to when I listen, based on, knowing the journeys of the people who came before me, because without them, I wouldn't be in England. Where would I be? Who knows? Because I don't deal with shoulda, coulda, woulda. I'm here. My children are here. Where their children are, that will be their choice if they choose to have children. But again, they're able to learn that this was Selena's choice. So everybody will learn that this is the choice Selena made. And then I will learn this is the choice that Debbie made. I will learn this is the choice that, everybody made. And I'll be able to, oh, I wonder what they were thinking when they made that choice. I wonder if they're really happy, in themselves doing what they're doing. Because I hope so, because I am where I am, And I hope that everybody is able to get to that point as we're moving forward, especially looking at the world and the way the world is as it is now. But as a historian, this is not new for this world. Worlds continue to create themselves and have these impacts and have these worries and have these worlds to keep it in a certain way.
That's wow, yes. So, anyway, my next question is I love your answers, honestly. The next question is, how can we as parents encourage and ignite and excite our children into understanding and knowing more about their history and getting involved with history a bit more?
What I used to do, because I used to homeschool myself. So what I used to do is I used to take his interest. So I used to show him different things, get different books. When we go to the library, take out a variety of books and see what he resonates with. When you take them shopping, there are certain toys or certain things that they, so he liked dinosaurs. So when I learned he liked dinosaurs, that's how he learned how to spell. That's how he learned how to read. That's how he learned how to count. That's how he learned how to color. He learned all of those things. But then through doing that, that's how he learned about the world. Because where the dinosaur bones can be found, we would then have that as a lesson, you know, when we go to museums and we look at the dinosaur bones, we'd be in particular sections, which then would allow us to expand that. So from my perspective, you know, none of our children are the same. You know, they don't act the same, they don't behave the same, they don't work the same. But all of a sudden we condition ourselves to say, like, well, everybody's reading at this stage, or everybody's doing their ABCs. It's not that. Yeah, let them be passionate, let them enjoy, you know, trying swimming or trying horse riding or trying rock climbing or trying, you know, these are just a few things that we enjoy, that we, you know, we try and look at the worlds that you're interested in. As parents, what do you like? Share that with your children. If they don't like it, that's not a problem, but you're sharing your passion with them, to for them to see that this is what passion looks like. So when I get to mine can also be nurtured in the same way. And again, just not to be hard on ourselves. You know, there is no correct way of doing things when it comes down to children, you know, and being truthful, whether or not you're in the right place, in the right space, because, you know, a lot of us are under extreme stress and duress, you know, and when you see other parents doing other things, you know, things for their children, sometimes there are parents that get disheartened and almost, you know, feel do themselves harm because they're like, well, I'm not doing good enough. It's not that, because from my perspective as a mum who has two children, any mum that isn't doing well with their children is not well, because nobody wants the life that they spent their time carrying and nurturing to have any harm or anything happen to them, or anything to, you know, to make any kind of negative impact on them. But we aren't okay. And as a community, we're not okay, you know? And it's very much about understanding where you are as mum and dad, where you are as parents, where you are, whether or not you're a single mum, single dad, in a relationship, married, whatever it looks like. Where are you as a parent? Because before then, before you even go on to deal with your children, it's about you. The sustainable one is mum, it's the dad, you know, it's the guardian. We're the sustainable ones. What are we showing? Because everybody leads by examples. You know, my daughter picks up a book because she sees me in books. We read books. She's now drawing. She's now doing, because that's what she sees of me. And that's, you know, the work that I do. But then I also look at what does she likes cooking. You know, she likes baking. She'll go in there and want to do it herself. She's four, you know. She's like, well, I can do it myself. And I look at her confidence and things, and that's coming from me. She's her own person, but I can see very much of me in her, in her character, and much of her dad in her character. And it's about knowing how to support her with those aspects, you know, making sure that there's time. It's okay that you empty a whole bag of flour on the floor. And I don't need to get mad about it because we have a Hoover. You know, and the flower was 63p, you know, and, you know, and it's just literally putting it down like that. Because whereas now, you know, I've got to take that 30 minutes to clean. I didn't have that 30 minutes, but that's 30 minutes of time with her, for her to learn something that, you know, I couldn't write and teach her. You know, we can't write and teach them and give them instructions of how to be. You know, it's the interactions that we have. And it's just about trying to ensure that the time that is made is the time that is now. Because whatever you plan to do, whatever you're doing now, that's what was planned to be done. And it's literally about, because as we get older, because I wasn't like this when I was younger, but as I'm getting older, I'm like, where are you running going? Where are you running going? You know, I was running with Black Poppy Rose because I saw that there was a time limit on what was being done to be able to get things in a certain place. But as a mum, I'm like, where am I running going? This is the first time. I'm the first mum. I tell everybody, remember when we was on Jamelia's show, The Table Talks? I said, I'm the first mum, because nobody can't talk to me. It doesn't make sense to me. When I was going through my pregnancy, you know, although people may have similar experiences, it's the first time.
The first time, yes.
You know? And then when you're dealing with them, you're looking at them and how your brain works with them. Nobody can't tell you how you're going to think or feel when you're looking at that life that you've just carried, that you now think, okay, the world sees them like this. Like, my son's going to be cute till he gets to 14, you know? You know, nobody tells you that as a Black mom, you're going to be thinking, you know, especially as a Black mom, you know, looking at history, looking at the world, nobody tells you how you're going to respond to being a mother in a world that, you know, behaves in the way that it does and then makes excuses and tells lies about that. And that's why, you know, I go back to trying not to lie, because it really doesn't make sense to me. But just to give yourself time, parents, give yourself time, because you have it. You know, as long as they're fed, Not just any old rubbish. Not that's why mum goes to Iceland, you know, because they got to learn how to cook, you know, because that's how we pass down our culture. And especially being here in Britain, you know, we're having our rice and peas and chicken. But that's those of us who come from Jamaica. Not all the islands have rice and peas and chicken, you know. Every island has something different. And then when we're here, when we're eating pasta, we're not Italians. We're not Italians, Debbie. So when everybody's like, oh yeah, no, we're not Italians. Yeah, Italians made pasta. Their grandparents teach their grandchildren how to make pasta. We don't teach our children how to make pasta because that's not a part of our culture. Yeah, but it's a part of our growing cultures. And again, for parents, you know, we're a part of an evolution of cultures. And that's another thing that history has never allowed us to understand is that history, that cultures evolve. You know, as much as we want to go back to Africa and, you know, do drumming and, you know, do all the things that, you know, I you know, do all of those, you know, those things that root us to our cultures have evolved. You know, there are a lot of things that have evolved. And I'm not saying we should have drums because drumming is essential. You know, it's a
Of course.
root thing of our, a root aspect of our spirituality. And I don't say that to, you know, be disrespectful. But what I, the reason why I do say it is because that is not all of our culture.
There's a lot more to it than
There's a
that.
lot more to it. And it has evolved. You know, things are
Yeah.
evolving and we are part of an evolving culture. So the things that we're learning, the things that we're immersing ourselves in, it's fine to learn about the past, but we're also creating something new for the future. So, you know, black poppy roses have never existed. Yes, people hear of black poppies and things like that, but something like this has never existed. There's room for so much more. There's room for so much evolution of our cultures because we now bring them together. And being here in this country, we're surrounded by everyone. You know, when you go to certain remote places on the continent or in the West Indies or wherever not, you're surrounded by yourselves. And the television and whatever you have access to on your phones, on Instagram or whatever not. But here in the UK, we've got access to so many different aspects of what blackness may look like or sound like or smell like. Whether we like what that represents or not, we don't have to take everything on board. We don't have to disrespect people for choosing their choices either. But you know, what I say to people, you know, not everybody is kinfolk. You know? Find what's like you. Find what you like and go with that. You don't have to worry about what everybody else is doing. Be mindful of what they're doing in case, you know, it impacts you in a particular type of way. But you don't have to be up in their business and making it, you know, your business to put energy towards that. Build what you see. Build what you want. Build what you understand and allow your children to have that space to be able to grow alongside you.
Thank you so much, Selena. It's been a joy having you be a guest on the Black British Parent podcast. Can you please tell people how they can get in contact with you and where they can find you?
I can. You can find me on LinkedIn, Selena Cartes, Selena Cartey. And just so you know, Selena means lunar goddess. So I won't be dropping that name anytime soon. And then Cartey is an Irish name. So, you know, when I go into a room, people don't know that it's this face that's coming, which is great. But Selena means lunar goddess. And I'm like, you know, that's a title and a half, right? But you can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on www.blackpoppyrose.org. All social media is Black Poppy Rose. I'm also under as Selena Carty. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. We have a YouTube channel of videos that I did, you know, back in the day. Yeah, the website is the best place to get us on. You can book us for all kinds of things. We do what we do all year round. And I right now I'm doing a lot of keynote speaking, so I'm delivering my perspectives and the work that I do on stages around the world. I liaise with different organizations to be able to unearth some of their histories that they have and being able to use the Black Poppy Rose symbol to be able to spark conversations that people are ready for. Because again, if you're not ready, then you're just not ready. But we'll be here when you are.
100%. And you also assist people to find out their own genealogy as well, their own
Yes.
family
So
tree.
I am a cultural and ancestral genealogist. So I help people, doesn't matter what your background is. To be able to find ways to get access to records. I work with children who are orphaned as well to be able to get them to understand that they also are important and have a place, even though they may not be able to trace their biological ancestry, but to be able to give them a rootedness within themselves and to be able to start their journeys from self. So when they go on to have children, it starts from them, but there is a wider connection that they're able to draw from. And again, you find me on Black Selena Carty, but with the genealogy, it's www.yiwae.org. yiwei.com. And that's yiwei, which stands for you are, I am, we are enough. Because without you, without me, there is no we. And if I'm not enough and you're not enough, we cannot come together to be enough. And right now where we are, we have to understand that it is enough and there is always room for improvement. There's always room for development. And it's just about you taking time with yourself to be able to make those steps each day.
Thank you so much, Selena. Until next time, hopefully we'll have you come join us again. And good luck with everything you're doing here and in the future.
Thank you.
That's this week's episode of the Black British Parent Podcast. Be sure to go to blackbritishparent.co.uk to join the conversation. Thanks for listening. Until the next time.